All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Tiger View Podcast. This is the 17th episode. Last week we had a special episode with Andrew Truffaut, so I highly suggest you go check that out if you happen to miss that last week. Me and Dawson had a great time talking to Andrew, and glad to have him on. But now we're kind of back to a normal scale of things, if you will. We were going to have Daniel on tonight, but he kind of had some family business going on, so it's just me and Dawson tonight, and we're kind of going to be hitting on a couple of different things, mostly football. But to start out with, and I'm about to go over the schedule. Start out with, we're going to talk a little bit of MLB draft talk regarding Clemson baseball players and also recruits, and then a little bit of Clemson open house talk that they had last Tuesday, and then a little bit of SEC media day talk before we head over to Charlotte for ACC media day. And then me and Dawson's going to be talking about opening weekend talk, opening weekend slowly approaching. So we're kind of going to tease that a little bit, and then we're kind of just going to quickly preview ACC Media Day coming up this week. I know we've kind of already touched on it, but yeah, that's what we got for you for this episode. So rolling right into it. So MLB draft talk. We had four Tigers get drafted, and probably the biggest one and people expected was Cam Cannarella getting drafted 43rd to the Marlins. So Dawson, I just want to know your thoughts about Cam going to Miami.
For him as a player, I think it's a great spot. I guess the only problem would be is if he were to, and like we expect, make it to the show is, just controlling your discipline out there in Miami. But for one, it's a great spot. I don't know a whole lot about the minor league situation there down there with those guys, but I'm sure that Cam Cannarella will be able to excel. And I know that I was listening to Spaces earlier. They had Grayson Mann, and they were talking about Cam Cannarella and what the next few weeks look like for him. And they're still waiting on him to sign his contract, so I'm sure we'll hear all the details about that. And hear his signing bonus, which everyone will be excited to hear. And then he'll go down. I believe it's he'll play probably a few games in a like a rookie ball league. Probably not very many. And then he will be shipped off to, wherever they want him to start, whether that is rookie ball, low A, high A, possibly double A. But I think him going 43rd, I think he will tell if he really was being honest, that that's probably not as high as he want, obviously not high as he wanted to go and not as high as he could have gone coming into his last year at Clemson. Coming out of his sophomore year, especially after the Florida series, he was, put very highly on most people's boards, and honestly, he did have a bit of a down year. I think he'll tell you that, and anyone that really watched it, could see it. It's not that he played terribly, or necessarily didn't meet his own expectations, but it felt like the production was not there for a majority of the part of the season. And now, that could be attributed to many different reasons. He was walked a lot this year. Teams pitched him differently. Not to mention, coming off of his surgery, he really didn't get a fall camp at all. He didn't get much time to prepare. So, really, whenever he was thrown into the fire, that was kind of his warm up was the entire first few weeks of the season. So, things like that play a part into it. The team overall just wasn't hitting well. So, obviously, that's going to affect, RBI numbers when you're hitting and not many guys are on. That's going to affect situational, and I think he was chasing a little bit too much this year, but nevertheless, he still gets picked. He goes 43rd to the Marlins. As Braves fans, we're not going to be looking forward to playing him, obviously, but congratulations to him.
Yeah, for sure. And 43rd is actually still in the first round. The MLB draft kind of does it a little differently. They do all these special kind of picks after, I guess, the regular round, but it's still considered the first round. So Cam still is the first rounder. And I believe that was actually the last pick of the first round. So he just squeaks in there. But like you were saying, Dawson, yeah, he definitely could have gone, I guess, earlier, just depending on, how everything went this year. I mean, kind of playing off injury still, like you said. He really didn't have any fall baseball action going on. I know he was kind of shut down for the majority of that, and I know from playing baseball, that fall, those fall reps you get are important going into the spring, and then right when Cam was able to come back, it's already baseball season, so you kind of got to use those games as your kind of get back, and then he didn't have the year that we all thought he would. But yeah, like you're saying, as us with Braves fans, Him going to Miami is an NL East rival. We'll see how he does. But yeah, best of luck to Cam in his pro career. And we are still waiting on that contract thing. That's another thing people kind of forget about in the draft. You know, people get drafted, but it don't matter until, you know, they sign that contract. So we'll wait to see the details of that. But going into the next pick, and that was Clemson recruit and Clemson commit Dax Kilby, shortstop. He was drafted 39th to the Yankees, so a couple picks before Cam. But the Yankees grab him in the first round, shortstop, like I said. So maybe they're trying to find their next Derek Jeter. Who knows? But yeah, congrats to Dax Kilby on getting drafted to the Yankees as well. Anything you want to touch on with that, Dawson?
Honestly, I didn't know much about the kid other than, he's Clemson commit and, it was kind of in the air of whether he was going to be here or not. So I guess that's on me for not doing a lot of due diligence on him, but, congratulations to him, for Clemson. Unfortunately, you're losing him. And, you got another guy that we're going to talk about in a little bit also that you're, definitely now going to lose the draft.
Oh, you kind of froze for a minute. You good?
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he gets drafted to the Yankees, and he did sign his contract. I did see that, so he won't become a Tiger. But big props to him getting drafted out of first round out of high school. That's definitely something to be proud of. But our next one, and a guy we know a really bunch about, is Lucas Malmstead. So he gets drafted in the 7th round, pick 199, to the Los Angeles Angels. So congrats to Lucas, man. He had a heck of a year. He led the nation for a majority of the year in saves. And you know, coming right there from the side angle, he could be very dangerous in Pro Bowl. I feel like you always got those guys that can kind of climb up that ladder to the show just because of how effective and dangerous they can be out of the pen. Because I mean, teams are always looking for bullpen help, and I know the Angels, they've kind of struggled as of recently, past couple of years. So maybe that addition of Malmstead will give them a kind of boost that they're looking for out of the pen.
I know Lucas Malmstead, probably didn't finish the season like he wanted to, just missed on a couple of spots. But I do think that there's a spot for him in the MLB. I really do. He doesn't throw real hard. He's, sitting low to, sometimes mid-90s with that submarine angle. But that's the thing is coming from submarine, that throws a lot of guys off. Now, will he be, to me, will he be an everyday closer? Probably not, and he'll probably never will be that, not to not Lucas or anything, but that's just probably not where he's headed as a career path. But is he a guy that can come in and get you, a few outs when you need it and throw guys off with timing? Absolutely. So again, I mean, he's going out there to LA. That's going to be a big market. So he'll have a lot of tools to his disposal. So we're going to, obviously root for him as well.
Yeah, big congrats to Lucas again. And then the last one I kind of want to talk on. I really didn't know too much about this guy until I did a little bit more researching. But his name's Nick Fusco. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. Apologies if I didn't. But he's a left-handed pitcher. He was a commit from Miller Place, New York. And he got drafted pick 593 in the 20th round, which is the final round, I believe, in the MLB draft to the Pirates. So there is a good chance we do see Nick Fusco come to campus with that late pick in the draft. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out too.
There was one more. I guess we can, everyone knows Ryan Weidman. He really didn't have many intentions to come to Clemson. It was always a backup plan. He was drafted probably a little earlier than we expected. And I mean, I think he's already changed his bio. I mean, he's going to the league. So congratulations to him. But one thing I do want to say is, we're not going to talk about baseball tonight. There's no point. But I do want to say is, Clemson has kind of struggled in the portal really this year with pitching. There's been a couple of guys I know that have just, swing and misses. I believe one guy we lost from Oklahoma State. He's going to, I believe it's like Cal Fulton. A couple more guys that I could, think of that, Clemson just missed on. And, you got a lot of questions. Is this an NIL thing? Is this a, players opting to stay on the West Coast, or is this a coaching thing? And I think that there's probably a combination of a couple of different reasons. But, the portal season is not over. We got a long time to go, and I know Eric Bakich is working, really hard to do this, because we've had, visits lined up, and you're just not landing them, so that shows that they are making a serious attempt, and we'll see what happens. But if I kind of have a feeling that if they don't go get the depth and they don't go get these key pieces of pitching, we might, see ourselves in a similar situation next year. And then, you're a couple of years in and you're getting bounced way too early than when you really should be.
Yeah, hopefully Coach Eric Backers will be able to snag a couple more Porter arms because those will definitely be crucial for next season. I know we got a couple, but I'd feel way more comfortable if he grabbed a couple more. But like you were saying, we're not going to make this a baseball show tonight. We just wanted to touch on the draft guys out of Clemson. They got drafted, but now we're kind of going to shift into some football stuff now. So Clemson football, they had their open house for media last Tuesday. Dawson and I was unable to go, but we see stuff from it on social media and everything. But yeah, Dawson, I'm kind of going to hand it off to you and just go wherever you want with it.
I think when we first got the email about it, letting everybody know that it was going to happen, I don't think really, like, I personally didn't anticipate the amount of coaches that were going to be available to talk to. I was listening to David Hood specifically talk about it, and he was talking to one of the guys being interviewed, and the guy was like, "I've never been interviewed before. I don't know what this is like. This is, weird. A lot of these guys aren't available for questioning." Specifically, in his past he was, but oh man, I'm blanking. Lorenzo Ward. Lorenzo Ward has not typically been asked questions these last couple of years because he is a special assistant to the head coach. He's not here on a, he's not, like a DC or anything. Another guy I can think of is Gilchrist, the special teams, kind of guy over special teams now. And the big reason why a lot of these guys are now able to be interviewed and really, have an impact, and you're going to see a lot more guys probably on the field coaching players, is because of the new rules in the NCAA, allowing for more coaches now. So you're going to see, different names slide around, and you already have a lot of guys have different. Mike Reed last year was the special teams, coach, but in reality, he probably didn't have really much to do with it. It was more a couple other guys, and same with, guys getting associate head coach titles. A lot of that is for pay raises and to move coaches around. But I know, we wanted to talk about Ben Boulware, and man, is he got energy. He's not quite PR trained yet, but I don't think we really need him to be. I mean, as long as he's not saying anything, too wild on the mic. I mean, he's a total 180, I think, from Wes Goodwin. Now, a lot of people may question his experience and coaching experience, and it's very fair, but I think as far as a mentality goes, you're about to see a 180 from what Wes Goodwin was. And specifically, I'm okay with sliding a guy like Ben Boulware in that position if you have a Tom Allen over him and you've got all these experienced coaches around him to kind of check in on him, say, "Hey, this is what I would do if I were in your spot," and that's what you need. The problem with Clemson was these last couple of years is you weren't doing it to where you're sliding in one guy, at one spot where he's got guys overlooking him. You were putting inexperienced coaches at the forefront and putting them in charge, like putting a Wes Goodwin as the DC when he had never, called plays or really coached defense before. This is not a situation like that. This is a, Ben Boulware from a player's stance can get the most out of these guys, and still, if he needs help, he's got a Tom Allen, looking over him.
Yeah, Ben Boulware is the one that really caught my eye, just seeing the videos and stuff of him getting interviewed. And obviously we know him from his playing days, but him now coaching the linebackers, he was talking about how it's like a full circle moment for him. He's a local guy, went to T.L. Hanna High School right down the road from Clemson, obviously played for Clemson, won a national championship, but you can just tell even from the video that Clemson football released from fall ball, you could just see the energy that that guy brings. And then, I mean, he even got emotional in that interview, just saying how full circle it was. And I think he had like his coffee with him, and he was like, "Let me drink my coffee before I get way too emotional." But you just love to see that because you have somebody there who cares for those guys, and they're gonna get the best out of him, and he's gonna get the best out of them too. So I definitely like Ben Bowler in the linebacker coach position. And like you were saying, I do feel better, obviously, with Tom Allen over him to kind of control that. But I mean, I'm really comfortable with Ben Bowler coaching linebackers because, I mean, he's been there. He knows how it goes. And I mean, what other guy would you want to coach the Tiger linebackers than Ben Bowler?
Yeah, definitely. And another guy, like one of the, he's not a coach, but the guy working on the business side, Jordan Sproles. I made a tweet about him the other day, highlighting his importance and the things that, because things that go into his job, and I find it really fascinating. I love to crunch numbers, talk about numbers when it comes to this new era. I personally love to talk about it because it feels like free agency. It really does. And I think that excites me. But one thing that he said was, whenever they had that Texas game, the moment the game was over, they're on the bus ride, or they're on the plane ride back, and then from the bus ride, they're sitting on the bus or the plane or wherever they are for a couple extra hours going over, okay, these are the guys we want to bring back or bring back. These are the guys we think are gone. Making list over, who's going to return or not. And in this, they knew that probably. Rev share was coming, so they have designated amounts of money slotted for each position. So they're able to kind of make an Excel spreadsheet over players and value. And he said that, while they were going over the contract negotiations, there really wasn't anybody, for the most part, that gave them trouble that really tried to leverage leaving on them. It was more about, hey, we want to be here. We know you want us to be here. So let's get a fair price. So we can agree to it. And the first guy that pops into my mind is a TJ Parker, who, that was one of the things that fans were kind of concerned about back in December. Was, he wiped his Instagram clean, and I kind of was told and, kind of reiterated that same position was that, hey, this is probably just, agents, telling him to do this or do that. This is just during contract negotiations. There's probably nothing to worry about. And it turned out, that we were right. He would return to Clemson. Or you've got an example of a Trey Williams to where you've got a designated money slot for him in his position. And, sometimes guys want a little more than the school thinks they're valued at. And they say, hey, unfortunately, this isn't going to work here, and guys leave. It's no different really than a free agency is. Guys and their agents will look at the amount of money that this position is making, probably across the board or this caliber of a player, and they will go to the table with that. And colleges have to do the same thing. They say, well, this is how much money we have allotted, and you're seeing it a lot in recruiting now in high school as well. And I'm sure Jordan's very busy with these recruits, looking at each position saying, okay, if we have enough money to fund six of these offensive linemen, once we hit six, we're done. We have enough for three wide receivers, which is why you saw during the big recruit visit weekend, the big OV weekend, a lot of guys got uninvited because they reached their limit. They said, hey, this is what we're going to stick with. Sorry, but we're full now. Same with offensive line, to where once we locked in that number six guy, everybody else was kind of, hey, we're full now. This is the money that we've allotted for this position. But yeah, I mean, just little things like that to talk about, the resources and the where the money goes. I really find that super interesting. And maybe one day we could get Jordan or like a financial guy to come over here and break some more of that stuff down to us.
Yeah, man, that's just the name of the game now. And more each day and year, I mean, college sports has turned into a business, like you said. And just looking at the Clemson website real quick about Jordan, he's in his 11th season with Clemson football, and this is his second year as Clemson's general manager. That's something you only hear in pro sports, but now you have it in college. But yeah, like you were saying, just with all those players trying to come back for the next season, retention was a big thing. And we were one of those colleges that actually was the highest, one of the highest in getting players back, which you love to see. And I mean, like you say, see now with even recruits, you can see you can only take so many here, you can only take so many there. And it's only just really a money thing. But yeah, that's the name of the game now. All right. Well, kind of talking about Dabo real quick. I know we were kind of talking about it before we started recording. But he was getting, asked a bunch of questions about the defense and this and that. And he was just saying, I don't know what all the hype is about. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. I don't know what the hype is all about. You know, we look silly against the Citadel. And then obviously, the way Lenore Sellers played against us. And then even during Texas when they ran the ball over us. So just, what are your thoughts about Dabo? Kind of talking about like that with the defense.
I love it. I think it's hilarious. He's being real. I mean, and just like you said about the defensive line, somebody had like asked him specifically. They were like, what do you think about having all these, potential NFL players? And I mean, really, it's a legit question. And he just totally shuts it down by, downplaying it. He's like, I don't really care. I mean, these guys got to show it. They were terrible last year. And paraphrasing again, they were terrible. And he says the same thing whenever he's asked about Clemson's expectations this year. He says, I don't know why there's any expectations. We're the same team we are last year. So, why is everyone hyping us up now? And even when he talks about Cade Klubnik, everyone will bring up to Dabo about how Cade Klubnik is the, Heisman favorite or how he handles the pressure or, the expectations. And he just easily says the same way that he handled everyone saying he sucked last year. He shrugged it off. He totally ignored it. He said he's done it one time, so what's the difference here? Just 12 months ago, you had everybody saying that you're the worst quarterback in college football, that you're terrible. Clemson's dynasty is over. And a short 12 months later, you've got everyone talking about how Clemson is a potential national championship favorite and Cade Klubnik could win the Heisman. So I think that just goes to show you, especially from a player standpoint, is the narrative changes so much, and that if you try to put stock into news articles and headlines, that it will always fail you. And I think that's what Cade needed last year to see, and over this past year, and I'm sure he's probably grown from it and seeing it now to where he can look back and say, man, the exact same people that are praising me now and lifting me up and trying to buy stock into me were the very same people that said last year I shouldn't even be a starting quarterback. So I think that may help him kind of put the blinders on in a way and to really say, hey, the only person that control our destiny is me and this team. Nobody on the outside, and Dabo's probably reiterated it a ton too, is to tell his team to where, hey, you guys haven't accomplished anything yet. Just because you're in the news cycle doesn't mean anything. Which I have no concern about Dabo doing that. He has made a living off of doing that, and he turned Clemson into national championship teams by telling them, like he said in the press conference, you suck. He's made a living off of convincing teams that they are not as good as what everyone says they are.
Yeah, I know one thing about going to Dabo's press conferences, and you even know Dawson. I mean, you never know what you're gonna get from that guy. Like he's always putting on a show, you know, maybe a funny quote or just maybe even a funny story. But kind of just want to talk back on about Dabo on Cade Klubnik. I remember it was after they had spring practice. I think it was a spring scrimmage, and they had media availability after the scrimmage was over with. And I think it was the week before spring break was about to go. Go in session, and Dabo was talking about how Cade played on the day. Somebody asked him how Cade played or whatever, and he was like, I don't know, and I'm paraphrasing. He was like, man, he just didn't have it today, like this and that. I think he's already shipped off to Cabo or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said.
Because yeah, they were going, I guess, to Cabo for spring break, and everybody started laughing. But yeah, that's just something that comes to mind with that. And I mean, Dabo knows what he's doing in those press conferences. I mean, he's hearing all the hype, but you know, he's kind of trying to dumb them back down, kind of little bit of air out of that head, just to kind of get them back down to level ground. But yeah, that's just a story I could think of from this past year.
Yeah.
All right, so shifting gears now. Before ACC Media Day this week, SEC had their media days this past week, and there was a bunch of stories and storylines coming out of there. But the one that kind of got a little bit of traction, I guess you could say, is Lane Kiffin, coach at Ole Miss. He was kind of talking during his press conference, and he kind of had a little mentioning of Clemson. I got it pulled up here. He was saying, I had a coach that played Clemson last year say, put Clemson on my schedule every week compared to playing SEC teams. But there might be years that also the ACC really does have real teams. So, Dawson, what do you think about that quote from Coach Kiffin?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're back whenever you've got the SEC randomly bringing us up. I think that's, that's the highest form of flattery for other teams and other conferences to just randomly bring you up when you're not even in the conversation, and try to put you down. I think that is the funniest thing ever. And truth be told, even if this is like real or not real, I think it's really funny that Lane Kiffin has the audacity to bring Clemson up as if this guy isn't the guy who continues to blow games every single year. This year, he had a roster talented enough to go to the playoffs and really compete. And what did he do when it mattered? Lost to Kentucky, and he lost to Florida in a game where Jackson Dart threw like two picks in like 35 seconds. So I just like, if this were Kirby Smart saying this, it would probably be hard to argue with him, say, well, he's got flowers. But when you've got a guy like Lane Kiffin saying this, like Ole Miss is Clemson, like I don't want to like let the recency bias take over. Ole Miss isn't even half of the program that Clemson's been these last 25 years. Lane Kiffin himself is not a tenth of the coach that Dabo Swinney is. So, for him to say this, I just like it seems like he played it off by saying I had another coach say this, but the fact that you even bring that up just is so disrespectful and so inappropriate in a moment to say that. And I was just kind of brainstorming. We only played three SEC teams last year. Shane Beamer didn't say it. Wasn't Steve Sarkisian? So that leaves you with Kirby Smart. And I would say to Kirby Smart is, I mean, you played Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame is not technically an ACC team, but they're really affiliated with the conference, and they have conference obligations to ACC. So I'm gonna say, hey, you played one of us in the playoffs, and what happened there? But I'm in the belief that that didn't actually happen. I think Lane kind of likes to, put fuel to the fire sometimes, say some things that maybe might not be true or maybe might be a little exaggerated. But I mean, what do you think? I just think it's totally out of his way to say that.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin's another coach. With his press conferences, you never know what you're gonna get. And then him talking, just coming out and talking about Clemson, it's just, I think it's funny. And then him also saying, there's also some years that the ACC really does have real teams or whatever. And I've seen something on social media somewhere. Ole Miss lost to Kentucky this year. You know who beat Kentucky? Louisville. And I mean, I know we lost to Louisville, but still, that's an ACC team beating an SEC team. And then I think there was another one too. I forgot what that one was, but yeah, pretty much that's what it was. But yeah, I just think it's crazy that he's mentioning that at SEC Media Days, have you, about Clemson and ACC team. So, and I mean, even like you were saying, Dawson, I mean, that kind of makes you feel like maybe Clemson's back a little bit, when you got people talking about him. But yeah, I mean, Lane Kiffin's gonna be Lane Kiffin. He's always got something smart to say, it feels like.
Yeah, definitely. I don't even. I just thought it was a hilarious joke on his point. I'm
But
actually like, not. I probably won't say it, but I'm really interested to see if Dabo might say something back to that Thursday. He probably will not himself. He's not that type of guy, but you never know. I mean, Dabo is known to give some really, funny sound bites, especially whenever his team is qu called into question by another coach.
yeah, and I know somebody's probably going to ask him that. We'll see how he responds, but Dabo's not the one to, kind of take shots back, but you never know. He always has those funny sound bites. But something else that kind of spiraled out of SEC Media Day was Nick Saban. And it was talking about how there's a chance that Nick Saban could be back in coaching. So what's your fresh thought on that, Dawson?
We just tore Lane Kiffin down, and now I'm about to just compliment him. And Lane Kiffin spoke about it, and he said that frankly he thought it would have been sooner because with a mind as sharp as Nick Saban's, it almost feels like a waste that he's not in college football right now. And I think he's right. It's cl Nick Saban is clearly not ready to kick the bucket. He's certainly still a genius mind in college football, and we see it every Saturday with College Game Day and any chance that he gets in front of a microphone. Do I think that he will return at like the same level? Maybe not, just because he probably doesn't want that kind of stress on him. But there's also some really weird world that I could see him going to like a smaller program, just to have fun, or just to, give back maybe to the game. It kind of feels like, and I'm taking this from Ari and Andy on Three. They went live the other day and they talked about it a little bit, and they made the comparison to maybe Jordan coming back and playing for the Washington. I believe it was like the Bullets back then. I wasn't alive in, 2001 or whatever, whenever he came back. But they made that comparison, and that's not to say that Nick Saban will be like totally washed, but wherever Nick Saban goes, like if he goes to a maybe a little bit less of a contender program, no one's going to be calling them a national championship favorite in year one. But what they will be saying is that team could be dangerous because now you've got the greatest coach of all time alive, coaching your team now. So I think that would be a really fun thing for Nick Saban. I'm honestly kind of like concerned about one thing for him is, not to call his health into question, but I believe he's like 73 or 74 now. I doubt he would want to take a head coaching role just due to the stress factor of today's game and, things that he's already stated, saying that, hey, I'm just not interested in dealing with the NIL and the contracts. I could see Nick Saban coming on as a staffer somewhere, and I don't think it would be too crazy to say he might would go to a Georgia as a staffer or maybe a special assistant to Kirby Smart to kind of mentor him a little bit and kind of work with him, or just maybe one of his assistants that he's had, previous. I don't think that's crazy to say. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. But I mean, what do you think about it?
Yeah, first I just kind of want to do the context. So it was a former Alabama quarterback, Greg McElroy. He kind of was the one who kind of shed the light to it. He was like saying, if it wasn't someone notable, I would never say a word. He is a firm belief that Nick Saban will coach in college football again. That was a quote from 24/7 that I read. But I feel like, I know he does his TV stuff now, a College Game Day and all that. But part of me still feels like, and I can kind of see it, that he still wants to coach somewhere. And I kind of do feel like he maybe retired a couple years early. And I know with the how the game is developing now, he kind of didn't want to deal with that. But even still, I still feel like he's had maybe a couple years, maybe 2 or 3 years left under his belt. But yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see if he does. And I kind of agree with you, Dawson. I do feel like if he does take a coaching job, it won't be a head coach. And if it is a head coaching job, it'd probably be a smaller school. But I could see where he could go, with one of his assistants from back in the day, who's a head coach now, taking a smaller role, maybe analyst or somebody just maybe behind the scenes even to help out with their program. But it'll be interesting to see if any of that does happen. Sometimes things just come out just for people to talk about. And I mean, sometimes it makes you think, dang, are we really that deep into the off season? But
Yeah, we
yeah,
are.
we're way
We
deep into
really
the
are.
off season. But yeah, that's just my little thought on it. We'll see. But I mean, truthfully, I really don't think anything will happen with Nick Saban. I mean, he'll probably just stay up on his TV stand with the College Game Day.
Yeah, I can just imagine what he thought when he heard that comment. He's just shaking his head. I can just imagine that. But yeah, I mean, like you said, there's definitely a bit of an itch for him. You could kind of tell, and a guy like that, I mean, as a person that knows a lot of old coaches and guys that have retired, you're never going to lose that feeling. And perfect example, just like we talked about with Andrew Chufo last week, he said you're always going to be chasing that feeling the rest of your life, and I'm sure Nick Saban is no different.
Yeah, perfect example. And I mean, another thing I talked on a couple weeks ago when we had Daniel on, I mean, Nick Saban's still out there recruiting players for Alabama. And I mean, not to say that, he's gonna come back to Alabama or whatever, but he's still in recruiting mode. Like, he still knows how to recruit. So that was just something I thought about as well with him. All right, well, anything else you want to touch on that spiraled out of SEC Media Day last week?
I do not.
All right, well, now it's kind of our last little segment before we touch on ACC Media Day right quick. And that's opening weekend. Opening weekend is slowly approaching. And before we get into some game predictions for an actual loaded week one, I just kind of want to know your thoughts of what you think is going to go down week one, Dawson.
And I mean, we're not going to talk about Clemson LSU right here because, we're planning on doing a full show about that later, a little bit closer to the season. But yeah, I mean, to really not like go too deep into detail about week one, there's a ton of great games, starting with, Tennessee and Syracuse. What will Josh Heupel and the Tennessee Volunteers now look like without Nico Imelava? They're going to have Joey Aguilar, presumably. And Syracuse has got, a couple of different guys that they're going to probably be looking to. They got Ricky Collins. You could slide Steve Angeli in there, who I think is a phenomenal quarterback. We all saw him come in last year against Penn State and or against Notre Dame and play really well. Or against Penn State when he was with Notre Dame and play really well. And I'm a huge fan of Fran Brown. I just love the guy. That game is going to be played in Atlanta. So that will be the day before South Carolina takes on Virginia Tech. So we're going to be, frankly, we're going to be pulling for the orange in that game. And I'm not talking about Tennessee orange. We're going to be pulling for the literal orange, Syracuse orange. They've got, both those teams are really on a weird trajectory, it feels like. Tennessee, had this 10-win season and a college football playoff berth. Now they're kind of fighting to stay at this level, but everyone kind of feels like they're going to take that drop because of the loss of talent and because of the roster turnover a little bit. And Syracuse feels like they're this, this win could be really big for them and their program overall to get a big win against Tennessee, no matter how Tennessee is going to be. And another game that I just wanted to like talk about as well is the Utah UCLA game. We got away from Nico, Tennessee. Now we're right back talking to him about him at UCLA. I don't anticipate UCLA will have much, if I'm being honest. We're gonna see how the chemistry is with a little bit of a new roster for UCLA. I believe Utah, Cam Rising is finally done. That guy has been playing quarterback since I was like 14 years old. So, he's done. I believe they got Devin Dampier. He's from New Mexico. New Mexico. He was an All Mountain West selection. I've got that, on my notes from 2024. And they've got a pretty good overall team, I believe. They're always kind of in that conversation, but they've never really been able to break through. But I will think that they will handle UCLA in week one. They'll be playing in the Rose Bowl Stadium. So I'm sure that will be, one of those games that we watch. For me, probably I'll have it like tracking it on the way home from Clemson, honestly, because we are definitely going to be awake at 11:30 after that LSU game, win or loss. Another game is Notre Dame A&M. That will be early there. I believe that's on a Monday, or no, that's on a. No, that's Monday. Yeah, that's Labor Day. We know all about Notre Dame. They got CJ Carr, most likely at quarterback. Marcus Freeman always has a great team there. But what about A&M? What are they going to
Dawson,
look
it's
like?
Miami. Notre Dame at Miami.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. They played Texas A&M the week after for week
Yeah.
two. Sorry, I got my
Yeah, no,
date there.
you're
But yeah,
good.
Notre Dame, they'll play that game in Hard Rock Stadium. Nothing changes for Notre Dame here though. They've got CJ Carr, quarterback. Like I said, they're always loaded up front. I think the biggest deal is what will Miami look like with this new roster, essentially. You've got a new quarterback, you've got all these different pieces that they've kind of plugged in, and I think you're gonna find out really quickly. Can Notre Dame Or can Miami come close to that offense of last year? And really, I think it's going to come down to what does their defense look like? Mario Cristobal was very open in the offseason to saying that they wasted a generational offense. And I'm very sure that over the offseason, he put a lot of stock in his defense. And we're going to see real quickly because Notre Dame can really play football. And I mean, I'm sure Marcus Freeman will have his guys ready. So I wanted to know if you had a game or two from week one that you wanted to pick from.
Yeah, so I think the big one you have to look at besides Clemson and LSU, Texas at Ohio State. That's another big one. And speaking of big, that's a big noon kickoff, which I know people aren't happy about, but it is what it is. We get a big game in the noon slot, but that is at Ohio State in the shoe. So it'll be Texas at Ohio State, Arch Manning quarterback. People's, high on him. And I mean, I've even heard something where he's saying, man, I haven't even played a snap, a really snap of football. I mean, I know he's played a couple from past years, but I'm talking about just the guy who is the guy for Texas. And he's going to Ohio State, probably. I mean, we know how Ohio State is, with that atmosphere. And then Ohio State, man, coming off a national championship, they're riding high for that. And, Coach Ryan Day, I mean, he's ready for him. And you don't have right or I'm talking about the wrong one, Arch Manning, and then you got Ohio State. You don't have your quarterback no more, so you got a new quarterback. I know Ohio State, they kind of are kind of looking there for your quarterback. But yeah, I feel like Texas may sneak in and get this one, and I know how tough it is to beat Ohio State at their place, but I think Texas might put them on in that game.
I think the crazy thing about that game is the biggest argument for it to being at like a night game to rival LSU and Clemson is obviously that it is Texas and Ohio State. But I would argue that LSU Clemson will tell you more than Texas and Ohio State will. Regardless who wins or loses at Texas and Ohio State, everyone knows that both of those teams are like legit competitors for the national championship. And I guess the biggest storyline as you're going to see is probably Arch Manning versus what I think will be Julian Tsang, most likely. So maybe that's like the biggest, debate is what you're going to see. I mean, if Arch Manning comes out early and throws an early pick, and Ohio State gets on the board, but Texas ends up coming back and winning or it being a close game, that's probably not going to tell you much about Arch Manning, to be honest. It's just going to say, hey, he played a really good defense in week one and they played a tough game. Very similarly to what it's going to say about Julian Tsang. If they lose a close game or they win, you're just going to either take your hat off and say, hey, he played really well, or you're going to say, hey, look, he played a really tough team in week one. Unlike, and I know we said we weren't going to go into Clemson and LSU, but I feel like I kind of got to put this out there is, LSU and Clemson are both scrapping and dying to get a week one win. Clemson has struggled to do it these last couple of years. LSU has definitely struggled to do it for a while now. And it feels like it's going to be panic mode for both fan bases if they lose. For LSU, you're going to go into full panic because you lost another week one game. You lost to Clemson. You're feeling like you can't compete in the SEC and you're feeling like you're not a national title contender, which you should be every year. And for Clemson, if you lose, here comes the talks about you can't beat the SEC, that you're overrated, that you're not, this or that. But, so I think to me is that game, which got the night game, which respectfully, it should have gotten that. It has more storylines than the Texas Ohio State game, which, for the most part, just has the quarterback talk.
Yeah, so another one I do want to go into, and that's Alabama at Florida State. I know we talked on it a couple weeks back, with Florida State quarterback, the guy that transferred from Boston College. But I kind of want to correct my error from a couple weeks ago. I was saying that Florida State was coming into Brian Denny. Well, it's the other way around. Alabama's going into Duke Campbell Stadium, so that might do something there. But yeah, Thomas Castellanos, he was kind of talking, and something else came out about him from this past week. I totally forgot the whole concept of it, but he was training somewhere. Was it the guy with Alabama that played at Alabama?
I believe so. I know what you're talking about. I did not do a lot of background research into it because I didn't find it important. But yeah, I do know what you're talking about. I think he was, yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, he's still talking a little bit, but Alabama, they're going into Florida State and Tallahassee. I know Alabama obviously no Jalen Milroe anymore, so they'll be figuring out their whole quarterback situation in that game. But I feel like Alabama comes in there and kind of breezes past Florida State. Maybe Florida State will put up a little bit of a fight, but I don't think it'll be for too long. I think Alabama just comes into Tallahassee and just totally gets a easy week one win.
Yeah, Honestly, they could play this game on the moon, and I think Alabama's going to win the game by 50. It kind of has the vibe of, I believe, no, when Alabama played FSU a while, no, when Louisville played FSU a while back, I wouldn't even say that because FSU was pretty highly ranked coming into that game, I believe, and that was Lamar Jackson 2016, absolutely dismantled them. I would say maybe it feels like a Alabama USC 2016, yeah. To where, USC, they had the whole little entrance where they were acting like dogs and, coming in real hype. I feel like that's exactly what you're going to see from FSU this year, coming out of the gate. But I expect Kalen DeBoer to drop the hammer on Florida State week one, and that stadium is probably going to be cleared out, my predictions, by the third quarter start. So, yeah, I mean, look, it proved me wrong. Prove me wrong, Thomas Castellanos, but I don't have much faith in the Seminoles to win that game, or even much less compete.
Yeah, for sure. And then I think the last one that we were kind of saving the best for last, and that is the Virginia Tech Hokies taking on the South Carolina Gamecocks in Atlanta. And that one is on Sunday, August 31st, and that's a 3 o'clock kickoff. So yeah, I kind of just want to know your thoughts about that one, Dawson. I know you and Daniel kind of talked about it the other week, but yeah, you just want to reiterate your thoughts of that game.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel's not here, so I can kind of say what I want on this without backlash. I actually think this is going to be a really good game. It's a sneaky, competitive game. There are two worlds that I see about this game. The first is South Carolina absolutely runs away with this game, and they blow out Virginia Tech. That's a total possibility. Virginia Tech probably is not better than South Carolina, and Lenore Sellers just takes over. I could see a world where South Carolina drops 35 on them. Maybe 42, maybe a 35-14, 21-point win. But I also see a world where Virginia Tech squeaks one out. Very similarly to what I saw at the bowl game when South Carolina played Illinois, to where it kind of felt like the only way Illinois was going to win was by a close game. They weren't going to blow out South Carolina. And much like I don't feel like Virginia Tech is equipped to blow out South Carolina, I do feel like they're equipped to squeak by South Carolina in an early week one game. And how they're going to do that? Turnovers. Lenore Sellers tends to be turnover prone. And we saw that against Clemson. Without that late touchdown run by him, the story of the game was that he had two turnovers in really big spots. One on the opening drive after he ran it, 40 yards, turned the ball over, gave Clemson the ball back whenever they were almost in the red zone. And two, throw a late pick. So, you see opportunities there for Virginia Tech. You've got to maximize it. Also, you've got to just, you've got to contain him. I'm not going to say stop because I'm at this point to where I don't believe there is a way to necessarily stop him totally, but containing him seems to be the biggest thing that you can do. And also for Virginia Tech on offense, do not let Kyren Drones get drilled a lot. If he takes a sack here or there, that's not a big deal, but don't let him get sacked six times. Don't let him, be playing on his heels all day. Change up the offense. Have tight end start chipping guys, especially Dylan Stewart. You cannot put Dylan Stewart one-on-one with your tackle. I don't care who your tackle is, it's not going to work. I know I'm kind of feel like I'm giving a whole game breakdown, but now that Daniel's not here, I can kind of talk about what I want, but yeah, for me, I see the ending, one of two ways, either with a South Carolina blowout or a Virginia Tech squeaks by the game. I don't see a world where Virginia Tech blows this team out, and I don't really see a world where South Carolina squeaks by Virginia Tech. I just don't think South Carolina is this year will be built to play in a super tight game with a team like Virginia Tech.
I think another thing that kind of goes in with this game is the fact that it's a neutral site game. You got to think, if Virginia Tech was at home at Lane Stadium, how electric that atmosphere can get. And then the same thing with South Carolina with Williams-Brice, that place can get kind of rowdy too. But I think the fact that you're playing in Atlanta, it kind of makes it even more important of the performance on the field. And it's really going to be with the quarterbacks, like you were saying, Lenore Sellers, how can Virginia Tech's defense kind of contain him? Is he going to break off a run? And then another thing is, like you were saying, the turnovers that he's bound to make. If you make Lenoris have those turnovers, you have a good chance at winning the game. And then the same thing with Kyron Jones, like you were saying, the big thing is going to be up front with Dylan Stewart and their line. Are they going to be able to contain Dylan Stewart and make Kyron Jones let him make plays in the game? So I do think those are the two main things that will, be the factors in this game. But I think I might have the Gamecocks winning this one, Dawson. I mean, I know I hate to say it, but I think South
Fair
Carolina
enough.
fans are going to travel well to this game,
Yes, they
and
will.
yeah,
Yes, they
and
will. As they always do.
yeah, and I think the Gamecocks will win week one. As much as I hate to say, I'm being real and never want to be biased, but yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I want to like slip in a joke here. South Carolina better enjoy this game in Atlanta because that's as close to the SEC championship as they probably ever come. So, they better take this week one with some gratitude and, enjoy the experience. But I wanted to say that because Daniel's not here. I hope
Man,
he's.
yeah, you're really taking advantage of Daniel not being here tonight, and I'm waiting for him to watch this and then text us later on in our little group chat. But
Yeah.
yeah, those are our opening weekend picks for a couple of the big games. We're gonna wait and have a big old grand finale for the Clemson LSU game. But now, kind of our tiny last little segment, and that's ACC Media Day. The week is here. And Dawson and I, we're going to be going up. We've already got a place booked, and we're ready to kind of have some fun in Charlotte. So yeah, what's your thoughts, Dawson?
Extremely excited. This is obviously both of our first time. We're gonna be really locked in. Unfortunately, it is a like 7 a.m. start, so we're gonna be up pretty early Thursday morning, especially after a long day Wednesday, which will be getting down there, getting settled at our house that we're staying at. Really, I think it's just gonna be just enjoying what the ACC has. I want to see what they've kind of put out for us this year. Excited to see all the coaches and the guys get here, and really just it feels like football is back. I know a lot of guys talked about it when the open house hit. That's when football felt back. But for me, partly because I'm going to this actually, but the ACC Media Day. I mean, you've got all the teams there, all the coaches. For us specifically, we're gonna get Bill Belichick on our day too, so I'm pretty sure he'll draw a big crowd. I'm not very sure his answers will be fun. He's gonna probably be the same old Belichick from New England, but it feels like it's right here now, and we know that practice will start on the 31st for Clemson spring ball. And man, I mean, if I could jump in a time portal to August 30th, 6:50, I would do it right now with no regrets.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm just ready to get up there this week and, really just enjoy the moment, like you were saying. I can't wait to see what the ACC does have for us. They'll probably have a whole bunch of stuff, ACC Championship Trophy, National Championship Trophy, all the teams' jerseys and stuff they have lined up. And I'm just ready to, meet a bunch of people, really. I mean, like I said a couple weeks back, we deal with Clemson media a lot, but, there's always other media people out there. And even the ACC Network people will be there. I do know that. So I just can't wait to meet a bunch of people and, relay a bunch of news back to you guys because that's what it's really all about. And man, it really does feel like football's here. I mean, that's our next step to football season is ACC Media Day. And yeah, I just can't wait to, come back to the podcast and let you guys know. And I think even Dawson and I was kind of thinking about doing maybe a little ACC Media Day special like we did with the spring game. And all that. So yeah, I'm excited and ready to get down or get up there in Charlotte. All right, well, I think that'll do it for tonight. Anything else you want to add, Dawson?
I do not.
All right, perfect. Well, yeah, like we said, football's almost here, so keep chugging along with us and we'll see what it brings. But anyways, that's been the 17th episode of the Tiger View Podcast, and as always, go Tigers.